Hi, I'm Jaylene Black of Peer Benefits, and this is Benefits Genius Podcast number 20.
Hey, it's Howard Kettner, and this is a podcast with a difference because it's the first podcast with multiple guests. I'm thrilled to be hosting two of our previous guests, Dave Patriarch and Lori Power, who talk with me about mentorship, education, and collaboration, or the lack thereof, in our industry. This is really more of a conversation than a podcast, and it originated out of a string of email exchanges one weekend recently. So hang out with us as we also exchange perspectives and talk about how you can make your journey easier by doing the counterintuitive thing. We're talking, of course, about getting more by giving more. Stay tuned.
Before, Lori and I engaged in a little bit of an email dialogue following our last podcast, and then somehow we reached out and engaged Dave for his perspective and wisdom, and the journey and the subject matter just took us to a spot that was way too good to not share. So here we are, but I'm sure that I've kind of totally botched up or misremembered how this all started. Lori, your recall is probably better than mine.
Well, it started, Howard, listening to the various opinions on the podcast that you've been putting out there. It's coming from attending industry seminars and that mixed messaging. You have the insurance carriers investing in robo-advisors. You have the regulators on high in Ottawa making changes, and nobody is coming down to the floor on street level and asking the brokers, let alone the clients that we serve.
And asking the brokers what, though, Lori? What should the regulators and the insurers and so on be reaching out around that?
Well, really, do you want your client buying from the computer something to which they don't understand? We here, we're dealing every day with our clients, and we're explaining the different products that they're purchasing. There's a ton of questions that come through on a daily basis from people who've had benefit plans for years, and you think, my goodness, they don't know this by now. No, because it's not their main business. So if you're going to replace the broker with a robo-advisor, if you're going to have companies lay off a major portion of their staff so that they have the funds to invest in a robo-advisor, and therefore you reduce the amount of servicing that we're going to be able to get at the insurance carrier, we're going to be doing our clients no credit at all.
Yeah, I think the bigger question is, like, who's working for the industry's best interests? I mean, the insurers are working for theirs and their shareholders, which is makes sense. But I mean, the government, they pay good lip service to making changes to help protect the clients and stuff like that. But it, a lot of the time, it doesn't really affect anything positive. And I'll go one further. I'll say that I don't even know if the insurance companies want to be in the insurance business anymore. I think they want to be more in the transactional business, more like banks. And the banks see the insurance companies as being attractive, and the insurance companies look at the banks as being attractive. And there is nobody who speaks, not just for brokers, really, but also for the clients, like you said, Lori.
I absolutely agree. I think that's what scares the bejeebers out of me, to put it kindly, that I do think they're moving into a more transactional mode. You know yourself, it hasn't done the banks any good when somebody buys a life insurance policy on their mortgage and then somebody dies and they expect that payment to come to them. No, your house is covered, but you're not covered. And if you have so many Canadians already believing they have coverage where they really don't, imagine what it's going to be to the greater interest when we get insurance carriers that are only interested in the transaction. They're only interested in the money coming in.
You could say the same about travel insurance. You know, 50% of the people traveling with travel insurance aren't really insured. They've got a policy in their pocket, but there's no intent for it to pay because they didn't understand the questions that were being asked. It's challenging, but my frustration with the industry is, for the most part, brokers are afraid to rock the boat. And they don't want to stand up or challenge the status quo. And we see that all the time where we'll have a situation that's going wrong against a client's best interest. And I'll say, you know, escalate it, fight the insurance company tooth and nail to make sure your client is taken care of. And brokers are terrified of having their contracts canceled or that they're going to be treated poorly when it comes to the next renewal or something like that. It's really shocking that they're okay just being told what to do by the insurers who are our suppliers. And we don't even have to deal with them anymore. There's so many third-party administrators and stuff like that we have lots of options that we don't have to put up with it, but few people will make a change.
Yeah, and I think we do need to band together because at the end of the day, every transaction, every claim that we are selling that client, we have to look at that and say, have we done our absolute best to ensure that that client's claim is getting paid? And if we haven't, then we haven't done the job that we've been paid to do.
I agree with you 100%. I find it challenging. I'm not sure if you've seen, but about a year ago, I took on initiative to ask the insurance companies to just stop doing mid-year changes. Just wait until renewal. And when you do the renewal of a group policy, do an amendment to make the change, whether it's, you know, mandatory generic or whether it's some of the new drug formularies and things like that, or whether it's something as simple as just clarifying documentation wording and stuff like that. And insurance companies have no interest in waiting because it's a whole lot cheaper to do it mid-year. We put it out to brokers and said, how do you feel that the product you sold your client halfway through the year is being materially changed? And most brokers just kind of said, well, we don't have a choice. That's the way it is. Not interested in kind of pushing back to say, hey, that's not what I sold. You're, you know, basically screwing me by making me look bad by changing a contract mid-year. It's so bad, in fact, that some of the insurance companies have wording that say that it can't happen, and they breach their own contract by breaking that rule. Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? They wouldn't do that on the individual policy. They can't.
No.
And they shouldn't be doing it on a group policy because it's written right in there.
Yeah. So when we did a poll and let everybody know, I put it out to about 2,500 brokers across Canada. We had almost 200 people reluctantly sign the petition saying, please stop. And to me, this was a no-brainer. Every single broker should be in agreement that you can't change a contract mid-year. Most refuse to make a public statement about it. That's an apathetic industry.
Do you think that it might be a reflection too, Dave, on the amount of brokers out there that are selling group benefits, but they're not selling it as a specialist? It's just that add-on. It's that loss leader. And it doesn't become that important part of their overall business strategy.
I would say yes, other than there are very, very few group specialists in all of Canada. Like, there's less than 100. So everybody is trying to be a generalist, and they're all losing because of it, and they don't even get that they're losing, but they're not really doing a good job of any of the things they're doing, unless they're, you know, using a teamwork approach within an office. But it's just too hard to be a jack of all trades these days. It really is the master of none.
I'd like to challenge you, what's the response to that, or what is the solution around that? Because what I'm hearing is the insurance industry, and thank goodness the insurance companies are going to do what they need to do because they're running a for-profit organization.
Sure.
And you know what? Our retirement funds are there. So from that perspective, they've got to be looking after their best interest, charging ahead, doing things as efficient as absolutely possible. But I think there's been a modification, how do you like that for a technical term, of the roles of the various players. So what I hear both of you speaking to is the need for advocacy, client advocacy. I mean, the clients, at the end of the day, pay all of our salaries, all of ours as brokers, as advisors to the industry, and the insurance company employee salary. And yet, somehow we're competing so aggressively with each other that it seems to me, and I want you to challenge me on this now, that we've lost sight of our role as being fearless advocates. Coming back to what you were saying, Dave, about there's a lot of fear in the industry.
Yeah.
We are no longer, or maybe we never were, fearless advocates on behalf of our client's best interest. I mean, the stuff that both of you are talking about here, arbitrary mid-year contract changes, and yet a fear in the industry that if I sign this petition, my business is at risk.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, how many of our clients would guess at that?
Yeah, nobody. And to be fair,
that's scandalous.
There are some great people in this business that have been fighting tooth and nail for their clients for decades. It's not everybody. Like, I mean, there are people that I've seen who've gone to, you know, no ends to make sure disability claims are paid, or, you know, even me, I don't see a whole lot of disability claims in the small market. I hired an independent guy to take a look at a case and give me a suggestion to, you know, how to make it work better because it looked like a clean case. Packaged it all up, sent it off to the insurance company, had a claim paid, and it was paid for out of my pocket because my attitude was, I put you with this carrier. I think it's a righteous claim. The employer was supportive. The employee was supportive, and we just didn't get it. And, you know, they ended up paying the claim. And I don't think that was going too far. I think that was going just far enough. But so there's lots of people beyond us that have done a great job. I just think that too many people are okay with the status quo. You know, how low can you go? How little service can you give? What's the, you know, most, you know, premium you can get out of somebody and the least amount of touch points, whether it's education, communication, or whatever with clients. And that's sad. And part of that is this is kind of how the industry has evolved. How do we fix it? Become specialists. Collaborate. Work together. Like it's not hard to do. In fact, it's easier.
And you can't blame the carriers for going down the road they're going. And I don't think that's the conversation that we're having.
No.
Is laying the blame game. I think more importantly, what we're trying to do with this education is to pull brokers, to pull specialists together and say, we can make these changes. We can be heard because there's nobody telling the insurance carriers what we need. They haven't asked because they don't feel they should ask, but we have to band together and we have to make them listen. And that's the avenue for change, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't see it happening. You need to have enough people willing to talk with their feet and move and to actually be heard. I've always said I never wanted to start the broker union. And so some of the initiatives are more educational than, you know, advocacy based. But I question brokers all the time. They'll complain about an insurance company changing this and this is wrong and the service here is terrible. So I said, well, what you should do is just move all your business away to somebody else. Well, that's too much work. You know, clients are happy there. Are they really happy? Like, if all this stuff is really going on that you're complaining about, you know, you've got to move. And that sends a message. It may not be a big one. You know, all of us, you know, piece by piece are, you know, doing our thing and it doesn't add up to a huge amount. But sooner or later, enough people do it and you make them aware that you're doing it intentionally. It's not just losing a client, it's moving a whole block of business away. And you'll start to hear, you know, people start to listen. Like, but I'm finding too many brokers won't do that. And that's my hard part. When I did that survey, you know, you only get a limited amount of people. When you get the people that you talk to and you say, look, this is what's going on, they go, great for bringing it up. Good to know. Are you going to move the business? No. We'll support the company that does that. And I don't know how you fix that. And it's tough because I now have written off more companies over the past 10 years that I'll never deal with unless they change their way of doing things. And so people go, well, who's a great company to work with? I'm like, the one that hasn't made it to my hit list yet, you know, but
that's right.
You know, but that list is getting longer all the time.
Dave, can you just go through just a quick laundry list of the types of things that would cause you to, as you put it, write off an insurance company, and then we'll circle back.
Okay, without using company names, just to be polite. So
we're going to be very polite.
We'll be polite.
Downright dirty by, you know, half an hour.
So if we're going to go dirty, well, there's no way this is a buy thing. This is a three-way that we're having today, just if we're going to go that way. Yeah. No, okay, so one insurer has publicly stated that they have a whole department set up to do direct sales as well as broker sales, which is fine. Everyone's trying to get all different channels, but they've publicly said that if you as a broker, wrote a case with them, and then at a future date, they went to that client direct, they'd have no problem removing the broker and keeping the client. I have a problem with that.
I've been there. I don't deal with that company either.
And I won't either. There's one. Another one is insurance company goes into a partnership with a third party. That third party is a competitive entity to brokers, which actually kind of puts down the broker industry somewhat, and then data dumps our entire client list to that third party and tells them to market to it.
This scenario number one, only under a different heading.
Totally. Yep.
Yep.
Another company, this is going back a few years, but it's happened again since then. I just don't deal with them, so I don't pay attention. They amend their policies with no notice. In the case I'm thinking of right now was travel coverage. They amended their policies effective, they emailed it out December 10th, effective December 21st, dramatically changing and limiting the travel coverage for their clients, all group clients with no notice, no 30 days notice. They gave them like whatever, a week and a half or something. And their own contract says they're not allowed to do it, but they did it anyway. And they did it at the busiest travel time of the year, right before Christmas. And they did it at a time where it's very difficult for anybody to, you know, come back and argue it because nobody's around at Christmas time. So they kind of did it intentionally, hoping that nobody would fight back. And that's interesting because now all the insurance companies, if they have a big amendment to make that they want to get under the radar, they'll send it out Friday at 5:30 at night so that it gets forgotten about.
We've learned from the political landscape.
We learned from the media, Lori.
Before the long weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. How does the news cycle work? If you want to get in or if you want to get out, right? If you want to miss it, that's what you do.
How are you going to build trust in the industry from our client base if you have dirty pool methods?
Yeah. That's a great question. And so when I've gone to my clients to say, I'm moving away from this insurer and here's why, you have two choices. You can, you know, move with me to another carrier and I'll take continued good care of you, or you can stay where you are, in which case I'm no longer your broker because I can't deal with that company anymore. And for the most part, almost without fail, every single client follows me. The one that doesn't is the one that's got some really convoluted situation where it's really difficult to get away from, you know, the carrier or something. But they support me doing the right thing because they know at the end of the day it's looking out for them.
Absolutely.
So there's a couple.
If you're saying that to your client, you know, that's your investment fellow coming and saying, well, you know what, this fund is about to go under.
Yep.
If you want to sink with that ship, you continue on there, or I'm going to move your money where it's going to be safe. Oh, if I stay and the ship sinks, who am I going to blame?
Yeah, totally. And I get to the point now where if a client doesn't have enough trust in me, then it's just better to walk away. Because I don't want to have to explain to them why later on it was so important that they do it, and yet I wouldn't push it that extra little bit. If I walk away, that tells you how important it is.
Based on previous conversations that we've had and that you and I have had, Lori, the list of sins, mistakes, and grievances as perpetrated by various insurance companies goes on, and we could spend the entire podcast on that. But they're only getting away with it for one of two reasons. A, the broker advisor that they're dealing with doesn't know, so that's one issue. Or number two, they don't care enough to do something about it. And in my mind, both of those situations, in terms of, Lori, you just used the word trust, that we need to have with our clients, wow, they're entrusting us to both know and care. What do we do about that if there's an apathy that it's okay to not know or not care enough?
Well, I think we're doing it. We're getting that message across, Howard. Thanks to you, we have this podcast that is gaining attention. It's putting the messaging out there. I'll bet you that in a while, if Dave did the same mail out to these brokers and ask these same questions again, with this further education, you may get more people on board because they know they're not alone. Just like you said, Dave, it doesn't matter how big or how small that block of business is. Right now, they think if they move their block, it's just, you're
a drop in the bucket
of the ocean.
Yeah.
But if we're all moving and we're all moving in the same direction and we're saying, hello, look at us down here. We matter too because we represent your clients who are first and foremost our clients.
Yep. So, Lori, I'm going to challenge you to talk to the brokers that you know and respect in the group side of things. And that company that you know that you've run into that same situation, ask how many of them still deal with that company. I'm going to bet it's going to be every single one. They know about it. they've seen the effect. They've heard the stories. Nobody at that company will deny everything that we talked about, and yet they will not move their business away.
Yeah.
How do we change that? Because that's not an ambiguous, this could be a problem one day. This is a problem today. All of these things are.
Until they're actually burned, they somehow have to think that they're above the burn. So.
I know, and Laura, you and I are going to be like foils against each other today. I think I agree, except they get burned over and over again. Because I get those phone calls when people go, oh my gosh, here's what they did to me now. And I go, okay, so walk away. And then you'll get the same phone call 6 months later about something else, like going, you'll never guess what this company did now. I'm like, sure I will, because that's why I left. Have you left? No, but I'm getting really mad now. Great. So, and 3 years later, you're having the same argument. I'm still having an argument with one broker. This has been going on for 6 or 7 years. And I'm like going, the company's a problem. He goes, I know. So you're going to move your business? Well, I'm not doing anything that drastic. So what we're doing is reinforcing the behavior.
Are they scared of their clients? Are they not thinking that they're established enough with their clients that their clients would trust them, to use that word again, to trust them in their best interest, to be working in the best interest?
And I think a lot of people in our industry are not consultants or partners or, whatever advisor roles, names, titles you want to use. I think a lot of them are order takers. And they are terrified of their client. They're the brokers that the client says, you got to shop this. And the broker goes, okay. And I always joke, I say, it's not a joke, it's serious. When a client says to me, Dave, I want you to shop this, I look at them and go, you just fired me. You just told me that you think you know how to do my job better than I do. So therefore, I'm sorry, we can't work together anymore. Good luck and best wishes. And it's amazing to watch how people turn around. I go, I don't walk in and tell you how to run your business. Please don't tell me how to do mine. So if you don't trust me, then that's a good reason for us not to work together anymore. If you think you know better, then that's a good reason for us not to work together. Because believe it or not, I kind of know this stuff pretty good by now. So.
But I'll ask you, Howard, I had a comment come around the same time that you and I started our email correspondence, where somebody said, why would a new broker get into this industry right now with all of these scenarios? People coming fresh out of university, they're not stupid. They see things going on. They know what's happening with the regulators. They're investigating our industry before they decide to take the plunge. Who's going to buy that group's business? Who's going to move forward in this industry if we're not collaborating for change, if we're not making that change happen? What do you see? Because you sold your business, you did well by that business. Would that person still buy your business today?
Yes. Sorry, that was Dave jumping in answering for Howard. Go ahead, Howard.
No, absolutely. And so what I have to go back to is what attracted me into the business. And what I seen was a business where there was collaboration. The folks that recruited me to the business did a wonderful, wonderful job. The reality of what happened is the fellow that recruited me to the business, he spent at least 3 months of pretty focused, pretty persuasive effort to bring me into the business. And he left the business completely a month after he had recruited me. But what happened is, and I've told the story on other podcasts, a whole lot of people jumped in and supported me. There was mentorship, there was education. And so I think this brings us full circle to one of our favorite topics. It's really easy for every broker, I think, to feel like an island, to feel completely isolated, me against the insurance company while trying to keep a client happy. And there just isn't enough energy, effort, or techniques at the end of the day. Because, Dave, I don't think that there's a broker or an advisor out there who wouldn't aspire to be as strong on their feet as you are when you say, look, here's an insurance company. Let me articulate 3 reasons why we shouldn't be dealing with them. Okay, now what I'm going to suggest is we're going to move you. Are you with me? And your clients jump on board. And I think folks would aspire to that, but how is it that you do it? Well, number one, Laurie and I know you have a deep, deep passion for the business, and that passion has driven you to learning the intricacies of the business. Well, the new advisor coming in, to your question, Lori, how are they going to get strong on their feet? And as I roll back the clock, when I started in the business, there was formal and informal apprenticeship happening in a big way.
Yep.
I don't see that today.
Oh, you're not looking hard enough. You do see it.
Well,
I put myself
out there to mentor. And because I believe in mentorship and I have mentors in the business, I think you'll agree, Dave, that's the only way we succeed is through that mentorship and learning from those of us that came before us and those of us that are doing the business differently. I mean, that's why you and I first connected. When I heard your podcast, I'm like, I got to get to know this person. Where is it going and what's the flow and how will the business be carried on?
And I'm not worried about that anymore. I was to some degree for a while. I'm seeing a lot of younger people getting into the business, choosing to be in the business. You know, we all stumble into it some unusual way, but they choose to get into it and stay in it. And there's not enough of them, but it's starting to grow. And they see it as a great opportunity. They see it as an industry full of a bunch of old gray-haired guys that have only got a few years left before they kick off, and then they're going to inherit the earth. And they're not that far off sometimes. And that was a male-slanted thing, too. I mean, just they look at the whole industry, right? But it's interesting. I don't know if I've ever told you the story, Howard, but many years ago, there was a formal mentoring program that was trying to be launched at an independent financial broker's, or just in front of a meeting. And Lawrence Geller was putting this thing together to try and bring people together in different specialties to start the mentoring program that, you know, has been missing for so many years. I'm going back, I don't know, probably the 13 years now or 14 years ago. So I signed up for it, and as happenstance would have it, in Toronto, traffic was terrible and I was late getting there. And I walked in and there's, you know, hundreds of people in this room, all at tables of eight, and in the middle of every table is a sign. So I'm talking to the person at the sign-in table. I go sign in and she goes, okay, you're at that table over there. Hustle up, hustle up. So I run over the table. I sit down just as the person on the podium has finished explaining how this whole process was going to work. So I, you know, kind of sheepishly look at the person beside me and said, okay, how's this work? And they said, every table has one mentor and a whole bunch of mentees or aspirants or, you know, whatever wannabes. So I said, okay, so where's the group insurance table? So they said, we have to look and see whose name it is. And so I turned the thing to look at whose the name is for the mentor at the table, and it's my name. And I'm like, oh no, there's a terrible mistake. And they all look at me, they go, no, we're all here to meet you. I go, no, I'm looking for a mentor. I'm still new to the business. I've only been in it for 5-6 years or something. So I run up to the front and I said, there's been a terrible mistake. And she goes, no, I don't think so. Of all the people who put in information about group insurance, you had 5 or 6 years of specializing in group insurance, which put you ahead of everybody else who signed up. So we took you from being an aspirant to being a mentor. And I went, okay, this is terrible. If I'm the guy who knows the most in the room right now, we're in a terrible spot in our industry, because I'm brand new to this. Anyway, I met some great people, and I learned from all of them. Some of them I still keep in touch with this to this day. But I never really found a mentor that was a group specialist anywhere in Canada. Some names were given to me. Some of them were okay. Most of them I could not connect with in a positive way. And most of the ones that said they were group specialists were not. So the only way I could fill the gap was if I couldn't find one person who was fantastic, I'd take 100 people that were really good. And that was how CGIB started, was a whole bunch of people.
I agree.
And I just took a little bit from each of them, and nobody really noticed it. Nobody really felt it. Everybody was okay sharing a little bit. And so, Lori, your comment of, you know, trying to sit down and spend a few hours with somebody because everybody's so busy is difficult, but maybe a 15-minute phone call is okay. And there's a great program called 10,000 Coffees, And that's exactly what it was set up to do, was to arrange not a mentor for life, maybe, if you can't get one, but to arrange 10,000 coffee dates where you could learn from all those people.
And I don't think people want or have the attention span for, you know, a true blue mentor for life, because you change and you grow and your business changes and grows. For me personally, I've had mentors that have not been in my industry, but have had segments that I wanted to apply to what I do. So they're in business doing what they do best, and I look at what they're doing and I go, I want to learn about that, and I want to apply it to how I do my business here. And so that's more or less in the same boat that you are,
yeah,
or you have been, to say, this is where I want to go with the business, and this is how I think I can achieve it. But like you, there isn't enough specialists out there to say that, you know, you can find yourself a mentor. But offering yourself up as a mentor to somebody else coming in, an apprentice, so to speak, maybe for, you know, a few months.
And I will, and I'm like Howard will, and a bunch of us will out there, if anybody's looking for somebody and you're listening to this, call me. I'll connect you with people.
Yeah.
But it's a two-way street. You've got to be okay to open yourself up, become vulnerable. Like you say that all the time, Howard, you've got to be able to share how you fail, how you succeed, what your strengths and weaknesses are, if you're really going to, you know, be serious about it. And I often seriously joke with CGIB members saying, I'll help you and there's no charge. Just, you know, I'll support all the members. The members all support each other. Just remember one thing. Someday, and this day may never come, I will ask you to do a favor. And you'll do it with no question. Sounds kind of Godfather-ish, I know. So this is really a Laurie McNeil quote I'm stealing from him, but he takes all my best stuff and makes it his own anyway. And what I'll do is say, okay, look, here's a guy who's got your situation perfectly. He's trying to do this. I know you've struggled with that whole thing. I'd like you to share your story. And brokers, almost without fail, will go, well, I'm not going to share all that. He's my competition. Yes, he is. And you're mine. And we're all each other's. And yet, if we work together, we're way better than any of that. So you're going to open your books, you're going to share everything, and that's the cost of, you know, my friendship and support in the business. And you've shared with me, I've shared with him, he's shared with her, she's given it to her friend, and on around the table, and it ends up with some great outcomes out of the whole thing.
The sum of the parts being greater than the whole.
Totally.
Right? It makes the whole greater than itself.
I agree 100%.
Well, and I think there's a couple of models that we can use, because for years, Laurie McNeil was a mentor of mine and kept me in the business. Now, he was an insurance company representative who was very knowledgeable, very unselfish, and would reach out. And so for years, I would, during the course of building my business, either be going to bed incredibly late at night or getting up incredibly early. And so it was back in the day of the fax machine, and I would scribble out whatever my biggest challenge is that was on my mind that I was wrestling with. I would scribble it out on a piece of paper, fire it into my fax machine, either before going to bed or when getting up first thing in the morning, send it off to Laurie. He'd been gracious enough to give me his home fax number.
Really cool.
So gracious. In fact, he didn't tell me till years later that during this time frame, his wife was going through a fairly significant illness. So he would periodically, when she was struggling with the illness and being restless at night, he would sleep in the den, which is where the fax machine is, and it would go off at 3:30 in the morning and wake him up, and another piece of paper would come chugging out. And he was too gracious to even mention it. What a guy. And
totally.
That was one form of mentoring, but there were some other things I needed help with, and again, was struggling for a mentor. And I ended up being introduced through a regional representative for Great West Life, actually, a fellow by the name of Roy Dawson, and I need to reach out to him again and thank him for this. He introduced me to three competitors in the industry, and the result was we would lock up once a quarter for a day and a half, and each bring our biggest problem, be totally transparent, and we'd wrestle through things. We were being worked by the industry, similar to the situations, Dave, that you had mentioned a little earlier on in this podcast,
yeah,
where an insurance company was committing various and sundry atrocities that we felt were, at least in our estimation, that were annoying us. But none of us knew that the other was being affected till we came into a study group and were being transparent with each other. And it was kind of like, hey, they told me I was the only one having this problem, but I was out to lunch.
That happens all the time.
Together, we invited the insurance company rep into the next meeting, and that rep could not have been more surprised when they seen all four of us sitting around the same table. In fact, we didn't wait till the next quarterly meeting. We met in one of the members' offices, and he invited the rep in to have a talk with him, and we were all around the table. And bottom line, without going into the long version of the story, we got what we wanted. And that's the power of just four of us getting together. And Dave, you bring people into a room. Like, I was at two of your events here in the last 6 months. One was over 170 and the other one was about 170. Lori, I was in Edmonton and there you were talking to a group of 40 people in a room sharing your absolute best stuff. And I just want to say to our podcast audience, like, Dave is approachable. Lori's approachable.
Oh yeah,
and you can shoot me a note at howard@benefitsgenius.ca. It's way too lonely and way too tough to do it alone.
You're 100% right. And Laurie, you brought up a great point of actually even you, Howard, with Laurie McNeil. It doesn't have to be in your industry. Like Laurie was saying, it can be in something related or it could just be sales or whatever that's not insurance-based. And it doesn't have to be a broker. It can be an insurance company. One of the people who got me in the business kind of at the very beginning was Kathy Patterson, who was my Manulife rep. And she taught me everything I ever wanted to know about small business group. And I kind of stayed in touch with her for years and years long after she left Manulife and went on to be a broker again because she'd gone back on both sides of the table. And she was just kind of a great resource for, you know, all the stuff. So there's a lot of people out there. If you're newer in the business or newer to this side of the business, you just have to keep reaching out and asking for help. And I find most people are pretty supportive. There's some that, you know, don't share it too honestly, but most, I think, are willing to help out if you just ask because it makes them feel great.
Absolutely. Anybody who's been in the business a while, Dave, I don't think they hold it so close to their chest as when they first start into the business. To circle it back to your point, Howard, about bringing somebody, making them sit at the table and listen, I think that's what it is. I think right now all the changes or the disruptions, and the disruptions are not bad. I think that what we need to do is we need to make the insurance community know that we are here and we do have a voice.
nefarious. I think it's more of a, hey, if we can do this all at once, rather than go and amend 1,000 policies, if we can just send out one email or one little note in the newsletter and say, effective today, we're doing everything, it means you just got rid of having to reissue policies, redo booklets, redo all this stuff. And I think that's the savings that they look for. I don't, in my mind, and I maybe this is just hopeful, glass half full, I don't think the insurance companies are out there trying to decline claims. I don't think they're trying to find new ways to avoid paying stuff. I think they're just trying to, as Lori said earlier, just become super hyper efficient to the point where it may be detrimental to not just them, but to us and our clients as well.
Well, you think about how hyper efficient they are. If we compare what we were giving our clients even 10 years ago, you know, hard copy benefit booklets, you got hard copy billing statements that were mailed to you, you had your service rep at the insurance carrier. Now we don't have a service rep a lot of times. We have a call center somewhere. Everything is digital, yet the costs continue to go up. It's hard to continue to tell the client how much administration fees are part of their premium.
I agree. And there should be investments in technology to show savings, and the insurance companies have not made those investments. Many of the companies are dealing with some real legacy mainframe systems that can't do a lot of the stuff. I was just speaking to somebody the other day, we're talking about still running 6 or 7 different systems because of mergers and amalgamations. Others doing the same data entry 6 or 7 times, where 20 years ago we had an answer that solved the problem, but no insurer computer system could actually do it. They couldn't do one point, you know, enrollment for employees. They had to, you know, enter it into one system for claims, another system for billing, re-enter it again in another one for administration. And we're definitely better than that. But we're still a long, long way.
Oh, we are, yeah. For sure. You look at the intention of online services, they look great. They look fantastic. We got smartphone applications for every company out there. Yet if we have a plan administrator make a change, it doesn't reflect in the administration, or they'll make a change and it reflects on the enrollment form but doesn't go through to all the different segments or departments.
Yeah, you're 100% right.
So you've got massive efficiency on one end that looks really good, and you've got massive inefficiency on the back end.
Absolutely. I've asked for years, if we have employers out there that have group plans and the people are at the NEM level, like they get a salary increase and they should get more life insurance or more LTD because of their earnings, why is the insurer not driving a request to the employees to get the information, to get the right coverage? Because it would mean more premium for the insurance company. It would mean less liability for the employer. It would be more commission for us and less liability for us. Like, it's a win-win-win for everybody in the whole thing.
And it's an algorithm, for heaven's sake.
It's as simple as you get.
Salary increase, should just trigger an automatic email to that employee, which you already have on system because you forced them to do auto banking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you shake your head sometimes in this business.
Yeah.
For sure.
Again, underscoring the role of the advisor and the necessity of the advisor, because I think what I'm hearing us say is that until the robots become a lot better, there's a pretty big gap between client expectation and what we would consider to be appropriate delivery and the reality. Now, our audience has suggested that they like the podcast to come in under an hour. So we've opened up some great stuff. We're going to continue the conversation in future, but for this podcast, what would you say by way of summary comment, Lori, to an advisor, and you may choose to speak to an advisor coming into the business or an advisor that is wanting to continue growing their business, being strong, and building a business that has some real substance that they can sell one day. You meet with an awful lot of advisors, Lori, as a result of the speaking that you do for Business Career College and at other events. What would you say?
I would say, come and see us. You're meeting people via this podcast. Let's all get together and let's change Dave's protocol here. Let's make a move.
I love that, Lori. Can I throw mine in?
Would you take it?
Yeah. I think this is the greatest business in the world. You've hit on it. Lori's hit on it. Like, you can provide so much value as a great broker, and especially as a specialist. And the more you collaborate with others around you, whether it's sharing business or sharing information or collecting business, it just helps reinforce how great a business is and how there's so many great people in it. And working with all those people, whether it's through speaking stuff, whether it's through association stuff, whether it's through Benefits Genius, like all those things really keeps me going and growing and stuff all the time. I feel like, you know, every day I kind of go, oh my gosh, I got so much more to learn. I feel like I know nothing sometimes, and people like look at me and go, if you don't know anything, then we're screwed. I'm like, well, then come on, let's get on this ride together and let's learn a whole bunch more and let's challenge each other. And one of my favorite things about when we get a chance to speak and are lucky enough to do it is when people challenge you and make you better, as well as us trying to help make them better. It's a great business.
Oh, that's the number one. Yeah.
Yeah, get into it.
Well, you've both spoken to it, and I'll just say it in summary. What I hear you both saying is be very intentional, reach out and make a connection, and make an agreement with yourself to collaborate with someone, with anyone, and just build out that network. And Dave and Lori, here's with just a huge thanks for jumping on. Here's hoping that at very least we've started some conversation. And I'm really looking forward to where this journey takes us. Always interesting, never boring. And thanks for being part and jumping on to, again, the first ever podcast of more than just one guest. And you've added so much with your perspective.
Thanks for letting us be a part of it. It's fantastic.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.